Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest tech news, plus we'll likely discuss some court news surrounding sharing your password with others. There's a couple of disturbing uses for USB devices in the news this week. We'll talk about those. And a German publisher has had enough of people who use ad blockers. We'll talk about who is doing what and what comes next in ad blocking. Plus, your calls, texts, and emails. Of course, your Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions via email, midday@sdpb.org, or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio, or call now, 800-524-3604. We'll hear from our panelists and you after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts in to talk tech today and answer questions you may have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite. Hello, Joel.
Hola.
And we also have Lemonly's John T. Meyer.
Hello, English version.
English person. From the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us today. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
And you can call, text, tweet, or email your questions to these guys, or simply swing by the Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio and post your comment or question there. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. @SDPB is our Twitter handle, and the email address, of course, is midday@sdpb.org. You know, John, this morning I put a link out on the Facebook page that was a Twitter infographic that you had done.
Oh, yeah,
your
yeah.
company had
Did
done
you share that
for
one?
Someone else. Yeah, I shared that. I actually shared the original, the blog that it belonged to, instead of just...
Yeah, we teamed up with a tool called Buffer, which is a social media sharing tool. Great tool if you have to run a brand social media page or something. You can schedule your post up in the future. So say you have an event on a Saturday afternoon. You don't want to have to worry about being ready at Saturday at 1 o'clock. You can schedule it out. So they have a lot of data about what works on Twitter. So we teamed up with them, took their data plus our design, and learned about the best times to tweet, the best words to use in your tweets that have higher conversion.
I didn't see that on the infographic. Maybe I didn't read it well enough. I did see some things about size of the tweet.
Yeah, length.
Photo or not.
Yes, yep, that's correct.
Links or not. I thought it was very interesting. It was some good information.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's why I shared it. It wasn't for any other reason other than that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And so they had data that just from the course of them doing business.
Yeah, so if you use their tool and send their tweets through their tool, they, of course, can kind of monitor how those tweets have performed. So mm-hmm. they have what they measure as interactions. So that's anything from like a favorite of your tweet, a retweet, a reply. So what tweets are going, you know, unnoticed, which one versus ones that are being interacted with.
So analytics on
exactly.
top of your social media. That's very interesting, because what I've been able to track with a company called Keyhole,
okay,
looking at hashtags and interactions with Twitter and like Instagram, mm-hmm. I just kind of get raw numbers, and I don't, you know, it's interesting to me, but it's not taking the place of a full set of analytics like I could go in and get from Google Analytics. So
yeah, I mean, we always like to use the analogy of you know, the Twitter stream is called a stream, and it literally is like a stream or a river or a creek. You know, it's always going and it's nonstop. And so Twitter has an issue where a lot of people struggle to really learn it for when they're new users, actually. And that's shown in their data. They've had trouble getting new users. People who have been on Twitter for a long time love it and use it religiously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always been a tough tool to kind of adopt.
It's hard to explain to people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I like the analogy of a stream. I mean, if you're a brand and you're tweeting, you say, no one's following me, no one's interacting with my tweets, you can't just send them once a day. I mean, it is a stream. It comes by and it leaves. And what Twitter is really trying to work on, I think Twitter is the most enjoyable during live events. So you're watching the Super Bowl, you're watching the Grammys, you're watching the Major League Baseball playoffs, something like that. And you can see your friends' comments, you know, celebrities, people talking. You're all almost feeling like that second screen experience around a live event. And so, but what happens when you're brand new on Twitter and you follow your brother and you follow your employer and you follow three people, Shaquille O'Neal, whatever, you don't get that experience. So the Discover feature is something that they really are trying to improve. And they're struggling, and their stock has reflected that. So actually just this week, some Twitter news, they had to lay off about 8% of their workforce, about 334 employees, I believe it was. And that was part of the announcement of CEO Jack Dorsey, one of the original co-founders, has now been, he was the interim CEO most recently, has been named officially the new CEO. He's also CEO of Square, the payment processing company.
Okay.
The little thing you can put in your headphone jack.
And credit cards and take payments. Yep.
So he's going to do the dual CEO thing, which I can't even fathom how.
Wow.
And so
to call Elon Musk.
Exactly.
And get tips.
Three companies.
Although Steve Jobs did that for a while too. Pixar and Apple.
Yeah, he was actually CEO of Pixar, wasn't he?
Yep, for a while.
Yeah. But didn't he later say he regretted, like, it didn't go well, right?
I think it didn't go well. I think it went well for both of the companies. I don't think it really went well for Steve.
Yeah, and maybe his personal life. Yeah. So, interesting Twitter news.
Yeah, and like I said, it was an interesting infographic because it sort of helps me conceptualize what I should be doing better. I mean, we use it at work mainly, for this last week was a great example. It had state high school golf.
Sure.
And it had state high school tennis. And it had state high school soccer.
Yep.
And we had lots of scores and lots of updates and lots of stuff to communicate with people, and Twitter seems to be a really good way to do that, to update people that are interested in a very specific thing. So we ask them to follow a specific hashtag.
Yeah, sure.
And then we try to track that, so we know if we're being effective or not, or you know what we can use, or you know, one of the nice things about it is I can kind of identify who some of those power users are out there in the state. If you see people retweeting or you see people adopting your hashtag and using it,
that
raises a little flag for me. It says, hey, this is cool, and this person is obviously tuned into what's going on and is helping the cause. And so it's all very interesting, and it's just, like I said, it's another... For me at work, it's another communication device to the public and a way to interact as well, to ask questions. But like I said, it probably doesn't have anything to do with me being old, but it's just hard for me to handle another thing on my phone. You know, I can get email pretty good. I text my kids.
Yep.
The Facebook is good. But one more thing. Yes, that's how old I am. I call it the Facebook.
The Facebook, yep.
The Twitter is just one. And here's half of my problem. When I started doing it, I was the opposite of what you said. You said, you know, I follow your brother, you follow your mom. You know,
yeah.
I went out and just went, oh, yeah, follow, 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 follow. There's all these people in public media that are very interesting people.
Sure.
And it's follow, 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 follow. And then there's other broadcasting stations and other places, and you just follow, 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 follow. And if you start doing that, then that river that you're talking about drowns you.
Yeah, literally.
You get taken down
fire hose.
The riptide gets you, and I just became lost.
Yep.
And that's probably half of it for me.
Yeah, and some people like to use it strictly as a consuming device. They consume media from brands and sports teams and celebrities and individuals. And some people like to use it as a communication device where they interact. They don't just listen, they talk, and they engage back and forth. So I think neither one is wrong, or neither one is right. I mean, they both work depending on how you want to use it.
And you're a true master if you've got both of those things going on.
Sure.
And I know a few people like that, but I'm not one.
Sure.
And I don't even know if I want to be. I just
yep.
But I do know if there is breaking news or in either sports or entertainment or news. I know I can fire Twitter up, and I know what's going on.
Yeah, that's
usually beats the
before anybody
media.
Else does.
I heard some sirens in my neighborhood just two nights ago, and I went right to Twitter because I knew that would be the best place to find out, and indeed it was.
If you want a funny follow, I guess I'll give. We've had them on the show before. In a couple of years,
Argus
but the Argus 911 is
I love
it's pretty much just a this retweeting like the scanner, the police scanner.
Sure, yeah.
So right. It's not filtered. It's not, you don't really know the full story. It's it's tough to even really call it journalism, but it's they're relaying, like there's been some pretty funny ones that sometimes come out on the scanner.
Yeah, you occasionally a little sarcasm in there, you know, but it's mostly warranted.
Sure, true.
in a large city, you know, I live in Vermilion, so they tweet Dakota Days.
Okay,
but that's it. It's not a rolling thing like Sioux Falls is. I mean, Sioux Falls has got fodder all day long, night long,
and
Vermilion is just, I guess, Dakota Days.
Yeah, I suppose mostly because it is a
that already happened.
Last just happened. It just happened. Yep, and I was not in town. But I was able to follow the Twitter stream.
Ah, sure. You maybe were glad you weren't in town.
Down in the middle of Nebraska. Yeah, it was great. Hey, want to bring other folks in on the conversation if they would care to join us. You can call.
You can tweet us, right?
Tweet. Absolutely. At SDPB is one great way to do that. Is the Twitter handle that is a Twitter handle you can use. Our email address, midday, MIDDAY, at SDPB.org. Probably the favorite way of people getting hold of us. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604 is the number to call. And, of course, the infographic I mentioned earlier, facebook.com/techradio, will take you to that blog post from the company. I'm sorry, again.
Lemonly. Buffer and Lemonly.
Buffer. And that's sort of like, you know, in TweetDeck you can schedule posts. But it sounds like they have analytics in there, too.
Similar thing. Similar tool. Yep.
Okay. Well, very good. I'll definitely have to check that out. We've got things that we schedule as well. And, again, it's for reasons of not wanting to be at the station 24 hours a day.
Exactly.
It really comes in handy to be able to schedule some of those posts out. So, again, 800-524-3604 or midday at sdpb.org to do that. I want to bring Jeff Litterick on the line real quick. Jeff, in hardware news, a couple things caught my ear this week with USB devices, and one was a video that showed a person inserting, and I don't even know what you really call this. Is it a kill device or a way to take a USB device, just walk up to a laptop, shove it in there, and the laptop dies?
Yeah, it's really a kill. Most people will call these USB dongles because that's really what they are. The kill device is a kind of interesting thing because USB, most people don't realize this, provides power to the stuff you plug into it. Mm-hmm. So when you plug in a mouse or anything, there's actually power supply to it through the USB, and we charge our phones through USB, right? But the USB ports are pretty well protected from power surges and other kinds of issues where you could, you know, stick it into a wall outlet and suddenly it blows up the computer. People found a way around this by stealing the power from the port and then sending it back in on the data pins in really pulses, which overloaded the hardware, the actual capacitors on the motherboard that are supposed to protect from these kind of power surges. And it actually fries those capacitors, which then fries the motherboard. So it is a physical type attack in which it's pulling power from the USB port and then sending it back in a way that over time, a little bit of time, it actually, through many cycles, it actually fries the hardware components on the motherboard.
Okay. And it doesn't, in that, you know, of course, the headlines that got me to watch this thing are screaming about, you know, it fries the laptop, it makes it completely dead, or it blows it, or it burns it up, or whatever. But it doesn't actually, this version doesn't actually damage the data on the hard drive, correct?
No.
It just sort of disables the laptop.
Right. It disables the motherboard. If the drives and stuff are still okay. It is, Adam, if you pick up a USB device on the floor, don't plug it into anything. in fact, that's how some people found out. Someone stole a USB key from somebody, plugged it in, and blew his laptop up. It's one of the famous stories. So there's different varieties of these. They've actually been around for a little while.
Oh.
As long as you use trusted sources for your keys, you probably don't have much to worry about.
I also saw a story that interested me that was people were jamming communication devices with a you said a dongle, a USB dongle. They would walk up, plug this thing, or have it on their device. They would plug it in, and but that took a little bit more engineering to pull that off.
Well, it's a different form of something that's been going on for many a year. There's actually a famous hack where you basically it looks like a ball. You just throw the ball, and when it hits, there's a battery inside. It activates and jams all the Wi-Fi in a 200-yard radius as long as it's there. And it just looks like a ball. So it could take any form factor. In this case, they're using that power off the USB port to power the jammer. One thing to realize about normal wireless, and what I mean by normal wireless is the wireless most people are coming to, which we call Wi-Fi. That is unlicensed FCC spectrum. And there's sort of rules about unlicensed spectrum. And one of the rules is all devices must accept all interference and deal with it. So what that really means, because it's unlicensed, is it's not illegal to jam. The only illegal parts about the unlicensed spectrum that you can get into trouble for is transmitting more power out of an antenna than the rules limit, which is 1 watt inside a building and 4 watts outside a building. That's the only thing that you can really get in trouble for. So the jammers themselves are not illegal in any way. It's a valid use of the Wi-Fi spectrum. Anyone can use the spectrum for anything you want, and the devices must be able to accept any interference and deal with it themselves. That's the downside of unlicensed. Now, if you use licensed spectrum, with some broadband and wireless providers do, when, you know, as a regional or city size, that is very illegal to jam and can put you in jail real fast. So, but unlicensed, the Wi-Fi in your office and stuff, those are unregulated spectrum, and there have been jammers around for quite a long time, both in all the different spectrums. It's not too common to see them. This is just a $15 version of what used to cost $30 to $50. It's cheaper, and you just use a USB port to power the jammer. All the jammers I've seen, they're very hard to detect and track down when they're being used.
So, Jeff, jamming Wi-Fi is not illegal, but jamming, say, cell phone signal
is highly illegal.
Is highly illegal. And at some point, aren't those going to kind of be ubiquitous? I mean, aren't cell phones now using Wi-Fi for communication?
They can be.
Is it, yes. Are we going to see some are we going to see the FCC or somebody come in and regulate
Wi-Fi? It's a hard thing to regulate. You know, Jeff says things like this have been going on for a while. Back since the late 60s. Things like this have been going on. So there's nothing new here. I also don't expect it's any kind of real threat because it's so localized. Technology is going to get better able to, you know, block those. I think this is it's just a curiosity, more of a BuzzFeed one-and-done story than a real threat. But you know, this has been around. Steve Wozniak actually got his start building hardware. One of the things he made was a little remote so he could disrupt the TV in the dorm room so he could make people stand up and walk over to the TV to adjust the antenna. So, you know, we're talking a long time that things like this have been going on. So,
speaking of the Woz, Seth Rogen, right?
Yes.
In the new movie.
Seth Rogen, yeah, and hung out with Woz for quite a while to get some personal.
So the new
stories.
Movie comes out next weekend.
Next week, yeah,
mm-hmm. Or next Friday. So
yeah, we're talking about Steve Jobs, which is the new movie by screenwriter Aaron Sorkin.
Sure.
Of the
Social
Sorkin
Network. Part makes me encouraged because the one with Ashton Kutcher was not very good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, actually, that's now referred to as a TV movie, which is weird because
it replays on TV.
I saw it in the theater. When it came out, but apparently it is now referred to as the TV movie.
I'll give Ashton Kutcher that he did look like him.
Yeah, I think he got a lot of the mannerisms down, and the clips I've seen of the new Steve Jobs movie,
Michael Fassbender,
does not look like him at all. No. But I think maybe got the gravitas better.
Probably better actor
I guess
too.
We'll see.
Maybe.
I guess we'll see. I think the writing's going to be very good. I've heard lots of really great things, and. You know, I know the family and friends of Steve Jobs are not necessarily.
They've already come out and kind of not disowned it.
I think you got to expect that when somebody who's recently died is portrayed in a movie, you know, you're really not going to get who that person is. I mean, it's just, that's just the way it is. So I would expect nothing less than people to say, well, that's not the guy I knew, because it wasn't the guy that they knew. So,
and a reflection of his, I don't know, power or fame or influence, when in within the span of 3 years, he's had two movies made about him.
Three, if you count the documentary that came out just a month ago.
Sure.
And actually more than that.
And we're talking like, you know, does FDR have three movies about him?
There's probably another couple of documentaries that have actually come out since he died. So I think it's actually upper around six, either short or long.
I mean, at the
films.
End of the day, it doesn't matter if the movie's good or not. They obviously know that they can make money. And people,
yeah,
are gonna,
I mean,
go
he's
to the
such
box
an
office.
Icon. He's such an icon to people, you know, I would say, you know, 40 and 50 and younger.
Yep.
You know, it's, he kind of embodies the American entrepreneurial, you know, innovate and create at any cost.
Yep.
Is such an icon, certainly in America and all through the world. We'll see more and more. You know, in 100 years, I mean, he's still going to be talked about in the same way that Benjamin Franklin is.
Yeah, or an Einstein, or yeah.
So,
on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about a little court news that kind of interests me, and you've got a couple pieces for that. And we'll, of course, take your calls and questions as well after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, and I always love the conversation between the conversations, because we just had one on cell phone contracts. Believe it or not, in the last minute and a half.
Well, I was curious. I needed it more than anyone. So if I figured, if I'm confused, there's got to be some viewers out there.
Yeah, and
or listeners.
So the way that people are doing writing cell phone contracts now is completely different than they used to be.
Yeah. So back
the models changed.
Yeah. So my wife, which I think they had to, because that's where they were forced to change. I'm not sure if the companies want it this way, but
to make more money.
Well, I think that's the way it was going, or people could get around.
You know, I think there's a lot involved in this.
Sure.
Actually. And I think, you know, when you talk about, first we'll recap what we're talking about is.
Well, my wife thought that her, you know, how people used to say, I'm due for an upgrade, right?
Right.
So like she had a 2-year contract. She's kind of, she's still working on the iPhone 5S or something. And she's thinking, okay, I'm pumped. I'm going to get the new iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last time she had pretty good success trading hers in to Best Buy. Mm-hmm. I know Joel would say you could probably make more on your own,
of
Craigslist.
Course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for her, it was easy. She could walk in, sell it. So she goes in, and they're like, okay, we'll give you X, I don't know, maybe 100 or something,
yeah,
for her old phone.
Maximum was about $200.
But then they said the new one will be $600.
Yes.
And because now I'm assuming that's without a contract. Right.
That is.
If
that
you
is
went to a Verizon store instead of Best Buy and said, "I'll sign a new contract," would
deal,
it be 200?
I you know, if you know that I'm wrong about this and you're in the listening audience, please update us. But this is my knowledge of that very specific situation. You want to trade an old iPhone in,
yep,
at Best Buy and get another 2-year contract. From what I understand is, if the iPhone's $600. The maximum they would give you for a trade-in is $200, which is considerably less than they were doing on the last couple of updates.
Yeah.
From and I think that was because they were overextending themselves with used inventory, and I think they got wiser because they were giving well more than that for devices.
It seemed like when you got a new iPhone, you were paying around $200.
Yes, and you can still do that. At Best Buy, you have to get a 2-year contract, trade your old phone in, and it's about $200.
Got it.
And that's the maximum that they give you. I don't think that they're giving $200.
And that contract is through the provider or through Best Buy?
That is through the provider, through Verizon.
Gotcha.
You know, and of course they give Best Buy the kickback.
And we talked about this a few shows ago, because like Apple now has the new, like, their subscription plan, where for what, $30 a month?
Yeah, you somewhere can get between 27 and 33.
Yeah, you essentially get a new iPhone every year.
Yeah, so you pay a monthly fee, and every time they release a new iPhone, you just get a new one. You send your old one back in, you get a new iPhone.
And I think Apple Care is baked
into that. It's much like, if you think about it,
like
a car lease.
Sure.
That's almost exactly what it is.
Which also means, I mean, we kind of already were, but now we'll definitely be getting a new iPhone every year.
Well, you know, here's the deal. From the standpoint of the consumer, that's what the consumer wants. There's,
yep,
no question that certainly everybody I know, and myself included, maybe at the front of the line, wants the new phone when it gets released. You know, whether that's an iPhone or you're an Android user,
sure.
Everybody wants, not everybody, I'm sure there are people that are just happy with their flip phone.
Hey, flip phones are like celebrities are using them now.
Many people like
it's true.
To get a new phone when the phone
you're
is released.
You're laughing at me.
And it was very difficult. You had to do a lot of things. You know, the things that we're talking about, trade your old phone and sell it on Craigslist, do all that. It's really annoying. No, yep. Nobody really wants to do that.
True.
Myself included. So this is, I think Apple's bringing this out. So to feed that need, because I think they thought for a long time that these providers would take care of that. But you know, the providers, whether it's Verizon or Sprint or AT&T, they look at that as another way to make money, and as well they should. But Apple would prefer to get new devices in your hand. They don't really care about the wireless contract. And because Apple did that and they saw that coming, yeah, I don't mean to dominate. I think the providers decided, well, we've got to get in on this too. So they've got their own plans that are similar to that. So you're kind of seeing nationwide the 2-year contract thing going away in the popular culture.
Well, I think, you know, you hit on a thing there, which was you're interested in having the latest technology all the time. And that's certainly one section of the market. And you said,
absolutely.
And they said, well, you know, you don't really care about the whole contract thing. Well, there's a whole other section of people that do care about either being on a month-to-month contract, you know, so they can turn it on or off if they
care
want
about,
to,
care about
or move around if they need to.
Wanting to be on it or not wanting to be on it.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, going and buying whatever phone at the supermarket or whatever and turning it on and off.
Absolutely.
Or putting more credits on it or more
minutes
or whatever.
Well, I don't think that this is in conflict with that. If anything, it
supports
that.
Yeah. Right, it's another option. And you saw that, you know, and Verizon came out with their own deal a while back that basically was a contract breaker and said, we're going to give you, you know, X number of minutes or whatever. And by the way, you know, the monthly charge kind of goes up for the devices. And so they kind of had their own thing, and they're just trying to get, I think, at what the consumers are looking to get at as well.
Yeah, within a certain
maybe
area,
not you,
of course.
But,
no. I mean, yeah. I think ultimately, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you could not get a mobile phone without a contract. You would go in, you'd be like, well, I want to get a phone, but I just want to pay month to month like
yeah.
I do for everything else.
Well, kind of like you could, like which was always the trend in Europe. You know, you like pay
exactly.
pay as you play. You
yeah,
just buy
absolutely.
The minutes.
That which is ultimately the cheapest way to do it.
I think that's what the providers are holding on as long
yeah,
as
they
can.
Yeah, they would,
but
they really want to, you know, stay in your bank account month to month.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And these are just little steps to get that away from them. I think if it was up to the providers, now they could tell me I'm wrong. They would have, oh yeah, you've got to have the 2-year contract. They would prefer
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
But because Apple is such a behemoth in the mobile space, they can go, well, no, we're going to do it another way. If you don't like that, you have to like that.
But so, your alternative there is a pretty big upfront cost for the phone.
Of course. It can be, although When you look at it, at that $30 a month, if you look at what your contract costs, it isn't, or what the phone would cost versus having to have a 2-year contract, it's not that unfair, I don't think, especially considering, you know, it's covered for the whole year.
I mean, I think that
something
Apple
happens.
Plan is brilliant by them, because you're going to pay more for that than you would for just buying the phone.
Yeah, I think it's a percentage more, but I don't think it's so much more that, you know, I mean, the other upside, of course, is, and I'm not defending this, I just think it's good for consumers. The other upside is you don't have to, you know, come up with $600 in a chunk, or $500 or $400 or whatever it is to
yeah,
buy the phone outright.
Some people would argue, yeah, some yeah. people who are proponents of leases and cars mm-hmm. say keep
absolutely.
Your money and
for sure.
you know, spread it out.
So, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it's the best idea for a consumer. We're kind of in a transition between going from everything's a contract to most things are probably going to be a month to month or a.
Yep. You know, and that was my confusion.
Yeah.
Like,
I think
you can kind of go either way.
It hasn't settled yet. And I think by next year, we'll see how that all plays out.
So I guess that's a good transition. Do you like the 6S?
We talked about it last,
oh,
last
I wasn't
week
here.
A bit. You weren't. No, I think it's fantastic.
We had the S6 and the 6S in the studio last
cool.
year.
Okay. Well, I don't need to show. Recap if you guys already talked
absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely. Did you get the new one?
No, I'm still on my 6.
Okay. You will.
I'm
still
will.
On my 5.
I'm usually like. One step
I'm waiting for February because
cool.
that's my contract date.
That's your contract date.
I hate that. I hate, you know, it's like, here's my deal. I got three kids. And you so five smartphones in the family.
Three, yeah.
You calculate that at $600 a phone, if you would, please.
Yikes.
And, yeah,
3,000. Yeah. 3,000. That's easy. Yeah. Next math question.
Yeah. And so the whole thing is it better off to get insurance and all that? Because, you know, my kids are pretty rugged on phones.
Sure.
And it's like, do you just try to pocket that money and just say that's my my own self-insured insurance policy against phones breaking, and you buy them as cheap as you can on Craigslist after that, or do you try to pony up? You know, it's a big decision. It is a big thing, but you know, we'll see what happens.
I think maybe you guys talked about this last episode, but the next time I get a new iPhone, I'm never going to get the 16 gig again. Just not big enough.
Hey, yeah, I think it's not big enough for some people. It's actually big enough for me.
See, I get all the time, it's like, you're running out of space. And I don't know.
But you shooting video?
Not so much video, but decent amount of photos. And then my problem is I used to do a better job dumping them into iPhoto. Now I love having them on my phone because I'm traveling and I see a family member or friend. I want to show them what I did on a trip 6 months ago.
Yeah, it depends on how you use your phone.
If I did better with iCloud, that would probably be the better option.
Yeah, I mean, I think they keep the 16, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of snarking when they announced that they were going to still have a 16 gig model. And there wasn't a lot of backup for them. But, I mean, I wish it was larger. There's no question about that. But I'd rather pay less. And 16 gig has been fine with me for my phones for a while. I expect it will be fine for me.
I mean,
me
they have a
also.
128 now, right? That's what they added.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is, I mean, like if you go buy a MacBook Air.
Well, here's the deal, though. The flip side is, you know, if you're you're a reporter and you're doing field reports or you're a documentary filmmaker, because, you know, the iPhone is a perfectly valid camera to shoot professional video on. Many films have come out recently.
Yep.
There's Oscar buzz for iPhone 5 shot films. So you need that. 128 is maybe not even enough.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a big spread on availability. And I'm assuming that, you know, the next bump, they'll probably move it up a bit. And I think we'll see a 256 or a 512 gig phone.
Because I think they got rid of the 32, right?
Yeah, they did.
So you jump pretty high from 16 to 64.
16, well, that's the trick, though. I mean, you know, it's only $100 more, and, yep, and you get four times the storage. That's the old soda at the movie thing. It's only 25 cents more for a large.
It's only a quarter if you want to upgrade.
And you always do
and
it,
and you
right?
get a refill.
It's only a quarter.
Shipping and handling.
Yeah, but then I won't finish it and I'll spill it all over
of
the
course,
floor.
Of course, yeah. The silo of soda.
Again, you can call, text, or tweet or email your questions or swing by facebook.com/techradio and post your comment or question there. Please don't be shy. @SDPB is the Twitter handle, and midday@SDPB.org is the email address. We're back on the air again November 6th. Mark that date. It'll be the first Friday, of course, in November. And our November dates are the 6th and the 20th. So mark those if you will, if you care to. Other dates, John T. Meyer?
Yeah, the 6th, actually, a good segue. That's a Friday, which Tech Radio always is, and that's the start of Startup Weekend, which we're doing in Sioux Falls, November 6th, 7th, 8th. So you show up about 6 p.m. on November 6th, that Friday evening. You get fed all weekend long for just, I think the ticket cost is $60. And on Friday night, you get up if you want to, and you can pitch a business idea, an app, a website, a service company, a brick-and-mortar store.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to have an idea. If not, you can choose to join a team that shakes down. We end up with about 5-6 teams. And then you have about 48 hours. You have the weekend to try to build kind of a MVP, a working prototype of your startup idea. We'll bring in coaches and mentors from around the community throughout the day on Saturday and Sunday. And then on Sunday night, we have a panel of judges and an actual kind of pitch, kind of think like Shark Tank competition, where you pitch your idea and there'll be a winner. And it's a great, great event. We've had, this will be the third year we've done it. We usually get anywhere from 25 to 40 people who show up and spend their weekend building companies.
And help me out here. Why should people, I mean, just getting off the hump and doing it? Is that why people should do this? Did you just come out and
I
be
think
a
that's
part
one
of the community,
idea, like
get energized and finally carry out this plan that you've been formulating in the back of your head?
Yeah,
for
I think
a
that's
while?
A big part of it. People who maybe still have your 8 to 5 and we're not asking you to quit that, you know, we're doing it on the weekend for that reason. Certainly giving up a weekend is a big deal, and that's why we don't get hundreds of people there. We get more like 30 or 40. But yeah, I think It's low risk. It's low investment. And for a weekend, maybe you've just always been looking to find that iPhone developer because you don't know how to make iPhones, or you're a great designer and you need an entrepreneur, you want to work on a great idea. So that kind of facilitates organically in at Startup Weekend as you meet those people that you may be looking for. And people have left Startup Weekend with jobs. You know, you in a weekend you create a new career possibly.
So you're a starter upper. You've done this a couple of times. You've been, I guess, an entrepreneur a couple of times.
Yep.
How difficult was it to do that first one? Now, was the first one with your brother?
Yeah, Scott and I did Nine Clouds, which he still runs today. And then,
how hard was that?
Very hard. We didn't do it by a Startup Weekend, but I think the point of Startup Weekend is to quickly iterate through some of those things so that some of those mistakes that maybe took Scott and I 3, 6 months, 9 months, a year, you hopefully maybe think about in a weekend. So on Saturday, they spend a lot of time doing what's called like market validation. So go out on the street or pick up the phone and call people and say, would you pay for something like this? You know, we did a lot of shooting in the dark, I guess, you know, we kind of were a little bit of everything to everyone, whoever would be willing to pay us. You know, I think our very first check at Nine Clouds, we went to a lady's house, got paid $50 to fix her disk drive because the CD was stuck. So we slammed on it a little bit and it fell down and opened up. She gave us $50, which is not anything in our business plan or our business model, but in the early days, you do what you have to do. So I think what Startup Weekend does, it really helps you focus on what are we trying to do, what's the value that we're trying to add, and who is our customer. We're not trying to be everything to everyone. We're trying to be X for Y.
The cost of entry to this thing seems really low for what you're getting out of it, and just the sheer networking and experience that you're going to get hanging out with.
If you love your job and you don't want to be an entrepreneur, I think you could still enjoy it as a kind of a push. Like you get a little uncomfortable and stretch yourself. Can I build something in a weekend?
Cool. And I'm going to enjoy hearing about it after.
Yeah, we will. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll even see if we can bring the winning team on or something.
You know, that would be awesome. That would be actually get them in here and quiz them on a few things would be really cool. Looking forward to that. Thank you so much.
So you can find that on Facebook or you can just Google like Sioux Falls Startup Weekend. It'll take you to an Eventbrite page, which is where you sign up, $60. And like I said, you get 7 meals throughout the weekend. And we'll be there. It's at the Raven Training Facility down on 6th downtown. So they have a nice, really great training facility where they host like events and speakers and do development.
Outstanding. We are behind in taking another break, so we need to do that quick so we can get going on the last half of the show. We'll be back. We're going to do a little court news and a little lawsuit news after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio on this Dakota Midday on SDPB. Fine fall day out there. And if you're curious, again, the topic during discussion was the Star Wars, of course. Why wouldn't we be talking about Star Wars?
Of course, yeah.
And so you can get the tickets coming up here, right?
Yep. In, I think, 2 or 3 days, October 19th, 3 days.
For the December release.
December 18th, yeah.
Christmas release of that.
I was telling my daughter, I said, I'm pretty sure that this is going to be the biggest movie ever. I don't think there's any question about that.
Certainly really. The most hyped, right?
Yeah. I see a lot of buzz on Star Wars going on.
Well, here's the deal. You know, 2 months ago, they had a merchandise toy release, midnight release at both Target and Walmart. I can't remember the last time that happened for a movie that wasn't even out yet, or if it ever happened.
They also had a 24-hour live stream going through all the toys up to that release. And that was one of the biggest watched things on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's going to be big. It's going to be big.
It's so funny because in 2015, we're at the point where it's, you know, your daughter's how old? Like eight?
Eight.
Eight,
yes.
Yeah. So,
good memory.
You know, we have this generation of parents now who grew up with Star Wars who are now trying to kind of like, you know, want their kids to grow up with Star Wars.
Oh, if you don't think that was already in the plan, you're crazy. I mean, the thing is, you've got the original movies. And whose parents are now, you know, my age. And then you've got 20 years later when they did the next three movies.
Yeah,
and
kind
now
of those weird people, phase of the, okay.
And now those people are in their probably 20s and 30s. So they could possibly have families or
Absolutely.
They have nostalgia for those. I mean, like, and now you've got, you know, I take my kid to school and every other kid has got some Star Wars thing on them.
Really?
It's, there's just not many brands that have.
Oh,
can
I know.
Live that
and
long,
then, you know,
that
I, the, you know, I said this when Disney bought Star Wars and then proceeded to announce the new movies like the very next day. They also own Marvel, and you think about how big those movies are. So, I mean, Disney's, what are they going to buy next? Brazil? I mean, they probably get a good price.
I mean,
on
they
right
have
now,
some of
actually.
The characters that will last forever.
Absolutely.
So let's get into a couple of things that I thought were interesting for today. You mentioned a lawsuit of Apple and
yeah,
University
I can
kind of
give the it's a big lawsuit. It's nearly $1 billion, about $900,000. A jury decided that Apple was liable for a technology that was developed at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. That is being used in the A6, A7, basically all of the chips that Apple had developed and put in their mobile devices, a technology that allowed instructions to be sent out of order. It's a really old technology, frankly, and that's probably why I think Apple was a little blindsided by it. Apple's not the first company to be sued by the University of Wisconsin for this patent. Intel was sued and settled a year later. Apple decided to not settle, and probably because they're going to, I'm sure they'll appeal. This is going to go on, but it's a large award.
Even for
certain.
Apple being probably the one company that's sitting on more cash than anybody, this would be a
here's the deal. Million? Here's the deal. The suit was decided in Madison, Wisconsin, and because it's public and because Apple is the biggest company in the world, I'm sure that they could probably argue and will argue pretty strongly that, hey, you know, this is, you know, they're socking it to us big, and every other device manufacturer in the world uses the same set of instructions, and the award is disproportionate to the award.
Sure.
So it's going to carry on, but it is a very interesting thing. Not a lot of state governments suing manufacturers based on patent infringement. So, but it is an interesting case, just a couple states over.
I thought I saw another piece of interesting news on that's going to be litigated, I guess, next week. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to hear on a second round of questioning whether or not accessing someone's account. And this is, you know, could be different accounts, and we'll run through maybe a couple different scenarios here. Using either a shared password, and I kind of take that as a, you know, there are accounts that we have at work that
so
everybody
HBO
shares
Go,
the password.
Netflix.
Or a personal, like Netflix. So sure. A user gives another person, like I give you my Netflix password, which I'm not going to do.
You could just say it on the air, though, if you just want to tell us.
Yeah, so, in theory, if I gave you my password and my username, and you go in there and use it to watch movies, legally, you're sort of acting as me, is one way to look at this. It isn't that you're, well, as some are arguing, it's theft of service. But I've given you, basically, permission to use that. So there's a couple of, you know, weird ways of looking at this.
Well, and doesn't Netflix allow like 5 devices or can use it?
So yeah, 5 people in your home.
So how do you track that?
Well, you don't. Here's the deal is, you know, these companies don't crack down on it because it's super hard to litigate. It's not hard to figure out. I mean, they can figure it out all day long. Oh, this person's sharing the password because it's on simultaneously, you know, in this place and this place 87% of the time, you know, or whatever it is. It's just hard to litigate. I mean, they and the downside is if they alienate any users, whether they're potential users, people borrowing passwords, or actual users, people sharing passwords, you know, it's too tight for them to start losing people. I assume that's the reason both HBO and Hulu and Netflix is not cracking down as much as you would expect.
Yeah, and perhaps Netflix is a not a bad example, but an example that's maybe not as important as if I gave you a corporate username and password and you went in and downloaded a bunch of things and then shared that, you know. I think there's multiple levels to this whole case. It's just going to be very interesting to see what the results come out as is as they try to rule on this thing, because it's on its second round, and the first round had consequences as well, as in you know, when it comes to computer fraud and abuse, and you know, is it abuse and is it fraud for me to share these things with you? And in certain cases it is, and in certain cases it's far worse than that. But I mean, a good Netflix is a good example for just kind of throwing it around the coffee table. But very interesting indeed. Yeah. Hey, John, while I got you here, what's the buzz on Facebook basically trying to be YouTube? Is that what I'm hearing, that they rolled out the more, you got a place to go, you'll have a place to go on Facebook to go watch videos, your own private space or whatever?
I don't know if I've heard that. I mean, I know that Facebook in general as a video platform is they're building a lot of tools around that, and I think they're going after YouTube.
Well, they've said that they're going to test a dedicated place on Facebook where users can go, where they can they exclusively want to watch video, whether that's videos they've saved for later or videos from friends, pages they follow, other video publishers on Facebook. And, you know, what the pundits are kind of saying is that this is, you know, they're kind of going after YouTube.
Sure.
YouTube sounds like a place where you would go and exclusively watch videos.
Yeah. Well, here's the power of Facebook. If you are a brand or even personally an artist, video creator, whatever, documentary, and you want people to see it, I would highly recommend don't upload it to YouTube and then paste the YouTube link into Facebook. So you have to do those separately. Upload to YouTube, and if you want people to watch on YouTube, do that in YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to leverage your Facebook audience, then you should upload it natively. So what Facebook can do is they will kind of more bury the people who post YouTube videos in Facebook, but allow people who post their videos into Facebook for more people to see it.
And they've been doing that for quite some time, too.
Yeah, and people are starting to figure that out. And I've been experimenting that, too. And so the difference between uploading a quick little video on our Facebook page natively versus pulling the link from YouTube, and you'll notice the views.
The latest video that I've shared was done that way. It was a promo, actually, or a promotional thing for the photo contest that we just wrapped up. And we have a producer at Public Broadcasting he's an Emmy award-winning guy, and he produced this 30-second spot.
Yep.
And it's just beautiful. But again, you upload it to Facebook, you don't grab a link and share it, because if you want people to see it, and they're finally getting...
And it's a lot of work, because then like maybe you want to make a 15-second version that then goes on Instagram. So now you have maybe what was a one-minute video. They have to make one version for YouTube, one version for Facebook, and then a 15-second version for Instagram.
That's a good point. I'm not sure that we would do that, but maybe in the future. Absolutely. To trim that down and make it leaner. But and I've noticed the quality has gone up.
True.
It used to be upload something to Facebook, and it was like, oh... You know, why am I doing this? It really looks like not very good stuff on a paper towel compared to being able to do it through YouTube and actually having it in HD. You know, if people have the bandwidth, they can watch it and it's crystal clear. They can blow up the size of their monitor. It's a good experience. Finally, now on Facebook, you can have that I guess better bit rate if you want to say it that way.
Yeah.
So, interested in seeing that, and you know, I'll try to link if you're a friend of any of Public Broadcasting's accounts on Facebook, check that promo out or watch it tonight if you happen to be watching Public Broadcasting. I'm sure it'll be
Sounds
on,
cool.
but it's a lot easier to just go find it than take a guess, and hopefully it's in the next break. But anyway, just as we're wrapping up here, I want to thank everybody that sent photos in. We had over 1,000 entries in the photo contest this year, and we added a youth category. Astounding photography work by
That's
both
cool.
the adults and the youth in the state. It was great to see. sdpb.org/photo contest. If you want the links to who won and actually see the galleries, you'll want to do that. If you have some time, either today or this weekend, you'll want to check that out. I want to thank our panelists, John T. Meyer,
for
joining us today. Joel Brovelite, always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
And Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer. Thanks for hanging in with us, Jeff. And I want to say thank you to everybody, and have a great weekend.